Good morning, everyone. It is October 28th, 2021. Closing in on Halloween. I hope you have your fake vampire teeth. I hope that you have your makeup, your clown nose, your Cruella wig, whatever you're going to need to have a fantastic Halloween out there. You know, my daughter is going to be Cruella, and I thought it'd be a good idea to have my sons be Dalmatians for her, but somehow my boys didn't like that idea, so they're not going to be Dalmatians. Super day out there in the Adirondacks. Supposed to be clearing up before it rains for Halloween, so we should be enjoying some nice weather. The trees are pretty bare now, pretty bare, but it is still a wonderful time to be in the Adirondacks. Absolutely crisp and clean. Great sunrise today too. Sun, red sky in the morning, sailors take warning, but you know what? I'm not a sailor, so it's all good. We've got a great episode here for you today, a Halloween theme. You remember those old Serpent and the Rainbow books and movies? Well, the one book and the movie from 1980s. They were from Harvard anthropologist Wade Davis. And the Serpent and the Rainbow went down to Haiti, of all places. Unfortunate Haiti. Been a rough 4 decades since then for Haiti. And in Haiti, Wade Davis was investigating the voodoo religion and its supposed practice of producing zombies, at least among some people, at least among the Bokors who work the loa with both hands, both work in the loa, the spirits, for good and for evil, working loa on both sides. And supposedly these witch doctors, these Haungans, were able to produce zombies and even sometimes a whole household of zombies to provide personal services, to shuffle around the witch doctor zombie alchemy lab, and I guess, you know, keep the fires under the cauldron stoked and keep the specimen jars separated on the shelves. And I'm making it sound a little bit silly here, but Wade Davis wrote a very serious book about it, and it was made into a horror movie. The horror movie was not nonfiction at all, but the book read very much like a novel, and it focused on this wonderfully named zombie, Clavius Narcisse, right? Or Narcissus. And Clavius Narcisse, he was killed, supposedly, and brought back to life, supposedly, by the Bokor, the voodoo shaman. And when he came back, he was a zombie and just shuffled around and did whatever his master's bidding was. So that was the basis of the beginning, I guess, of Wade Davis's investigation. And what he found out was that really, according to him, what was going on is that a poison from pufferfish, tetrodotoxin, was being used. And a bunch, along with a bunch of other stuff, there was a mixture, but the effective ingredient was purported to be tetrodotoxin to create the death, this poison from pufferfish. And then it wasn't a real death, though. It just suppressed the body's functioning, just made it look like the person had died for a while. And then sometimes they would go so far as to have a funeral, even burial, but not for too long because some breathing, obviously, was still needed. And then up the person would be brought, and the person would come supposedly back to life as the effects of the tetrodotoxin wore off. But as it came back to life, first of all, they're very disoriented. They don't know what's going on. And the Bokor, the witch doctor, the voodoo Haungan, was very adept at convincing the victim that the victim was now a zombie and had to do whatever the witch doctor said. Well, there was another poison involved at this point too, Datura, this is a flowering plant. It's in the nightshade family, has a gazillion awesome evocative names like devil's trumpet or jimson weed or moonflower. And of course, this datura plant, this produced amnesia, delirium, and supposedly suggestibility. So that's what was going on with the zombies in the 1980s. And we had a bit of a reproducibility issue here, right? Other people found Wade Davis's research to be quite controversial and not necessarily reproducible. Of course, there are big time ethical concerns with doing some sort of test to make your own zombies, and we couldn't exactly do that work. But even the limited investigations they were able to do called into question Wade Davis's work. And the upshot is that it's been 40 years now since the first book came out, and zombie technology really hasn't advanced much in the last 4 decades. Sorry to tell you that. Zombie tech pretty much flatline over the last 40 years. I don't know. Maybe it's following the same trajectory as physics. Oh, zing. I got you, physics. All right. But unfortunately, there are still plenty of zombies out there. Now, metaphorical zombies, of course, we're talking about here. And we're going to look at the 5 types of Fauci zombies today and how to deal with this zombie apocalypse, how to survive the zombie apocalypse. Or the zombie doomsday, perhaps I should say. Whenever I say apocalypse, I always think, of course, it really just means a revelation, right? It just so happens that what was revealed in the book of Revelations in that apocalypse was the end of the world. And so these two ideas have become conflated. So, how do you deal with this zombie doomsday that we have going on here with all the Faustian zombies milling about, shuffling about in our streets, looking for bad guys to feast on, because that is the zombies' mission, is to find bad guys and feast on them, what they think are bad guys. And let me just be clear too that I'm not saying that everyone who believes that the FDA is a source for good in our society, or everyone who believes that the Fauci hasn't lied about gain of function research, or everyone that still believes that the CDC has data that's perfectly trustworthy. I'm not saying that these folks are necessarily zombies. Not all of them are. It's quite possible to think critically about this issue, to think carefully and rigorously, and still make some mistakes, and still come to the conclusion that, yeah, the CDC, the FDA, they're all great. Oh, of course, Fauci never lies. It's still possible to think critically and come to those conclusions. Just, in my opinion, make a mistake about your thinking. But there are so many people out there who don't think critically, who don't approach this issue from a point of rationality. These people who don't do the thinking, these people who don't even give themselves a chance to make a mistake. These people are the zombies that I am talking about, the mindless ones running around out there at the implicit direction, maybe not explicit, right? Fauci is not stirring up the cauldron there in DC and then looking out over it and saying, you do this, you set up a zombie cell here, you're a hunter killer zombie, you're a breeder zombie, you do this, you do that. It's not explicit, no. It's just simply implicit. And these zombies, without thought, without any sort of critical approach, are just doing what they think the national security and the national health apparatus wants them to do. Whatever the flavor of the month knee-jerk response is, that's what they're going to go out and do. So, without further ado, let's get into the 5 types of Faustian zombie. Number one. So the first type of zombie is the true believer. This person out there has just swallowed the entire party line that, much like the Pope in the Middle Ages, Fauci is infallible. The CDC knows exactly what it's talking about. This person, the zombie, hasn't done any research on their own, but they know that every decision that Fauci and the National Institute of Health and the FDA and the CDC have made, every decision is correct. That's this first type of zombie, the true believer, taking it on faith, not even looking it up. So who are these people? Well, I'm sorry to tell you, a lot of them are teachers. And you can imagine how these ideas will then be getting transmitted to your kids, and how these zombies in the classroom are going to look at your kids who disagree with them, right? They're looking at that as brains, brains, as the zombies always cry out. Why is this group, why are so many teachers in this group? Well, because teachers, almost by definition, they believe in the power of school, the power of academics, the power of so-called science. But let's face it, most of them are not very academic. They're not really that good at comprehending academics and academic studies. The famous McKinsey report from 2007 showing that teachers, for the most part, come from the bottom third of all college students. And of course, that report was very controversial, especially among teachers, as you can imagine. But let me tell you, after 25 years in education, the bottom third of college graduates, it sure seems right anecdotally to me. There are exceptions. I've met a lot of intelligent teachers. I've met a lot of very academically capable teachers. But in my 25 years in teaching, I have met a lot of teachers. I would say the majority of teachers who are not very academically capable, who oftentimes don't even know the beginnings of their subject, right? I have met teachers who are teaching physics, but don't know anything beyond Newtonian mechanics and barely know Newtonian mechanics. I have seen people say that, for example, in physics, that the normal force depends on surface area, or that the normal force grows with the mass of the object in contact, the objects in contact. This is just, you know, completely wrong. And unfortunately, a lot of the teachers out there just are not the most academically talented people. And normally that's fine, because the most important thing about teaching is definitely not, or it should definitely not be, academic talent, right? Should be caring about kids and being able to work with kids. Teaching is not about the subject, it's about the kids. However, teachers do, because of where they are, they don't just care about kids, they do care about academics too, which is great. It just shouldn't be the primary thing. Kids should be the primary thing. So since teachers, you've got this combination here of believing in the power of academics, but not necessarily being especially great at academics. A lot of teachers, even though they believe in the power of academics, they don't like to do them themselves. They shy away from actually digging into material, digging into books, and they much prefer to just take somebody's word for it. They much prefer to just, you know, buy into the idea that, oh, he says this, he's right. Okay, I'm educated now, I'm done. I don't have to do any more research on my own, right? They'll just take the appeal to authority approach and call it good, right? They think the government knows what it's doing. Do not look behind the curtain. And whatever my college professor said was correct, because he's a college professor and I believe in the power of education. And, you know, if you've been on a college campus lately, you know what they're teaching them, right? Everything about America was bad before, but now we've got it all figured out and we're working to change it. And thank goodness that we're doing this. And now everything that we say is right. And do not question us. Never occurs to these Faustian zombies of the first type, these true believer zombies, that this is exactly what has been told to previous generations, right? Every generation gets told, we've got it figured out now, right? There was that super piece in Tablet Mag that's been making the rounds out there on social media from Ann Bauer about Bruno Bettelheim, right? And everyone thought during Bettelheim's day that he had autism figured out. He didn't have it figured out at all. Not a clue, as he even admitted in some of his private writings at the end of his life, came out at the end. But he still heaped abuse and he still wreaked havoc, and he still destroyed so many families and so many people that suffered from autism, because he was sure that he was right, and everybody else that was out there said, oh yes, he's right. And then this tablet may piece does such a great job of going through the fads that came after Bettelheim and that were described as the one true way, the perfect way. This is going to solve autism this time. We know it. It's true. And every single time they're certain. They're absolutely certain, right? And that's what the teachers don't realize. They don't realize, and it's not just teachers, but the true believer zombies, they don't realize that every single generation has been told, oh, the science is correct. We've got it down this time. This is what it is. This is true. We know it, right? They don't get that. They just swallow what the colleges are saying. And it's like a communist country, right, where the counter-revolution is still being fought half a century after the Communist Party has come into the power. And the Communist Party is blaming the original faction. And they say, we have to keep exercising these powers and we have to keep abusing natural rights because it's an emergency, the never-ending emergency, right? Like in Werner Vinge's A Deepness in the Sky, with a never-ending emergency. It just goes on and on and on. And the schools are setting up this straw man ghost of previous regimes to justify ever more damaging uses of power. And earlier versions of America were so horrible, so we have to go overboard in correcting things now. And there's a very similar mechanic at work there between what is going on in the schools and what is going on with a communist party that has come to power and still, after decades, is fighting this supposed battle against the previous regime to justify its current abuses of power. There are other people, of course, besides teachers in this group, right? A lot of suburban moms who spend their time in book clubs and they don't want to necessarily think on their own. They just swallow what Oprah or Dr. Phil is feeding them. And the same mechanic is in play. They believe in the power of education. They believe in the power of book clubs, but they're not necessarily looking into the issues at hand. I can tell you, last year on my school's DEI committee, that stands for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, most of the people on the committee, right, these suburban, well, were rural, but the people who volunteer for this committee, they fancy themselves to be the Illuminati of the Adirondacks, right? They fancy themselves to be truly progressed and progressed beyond the other rural people here. And they think that they know everything, but they don't think for themselves. They just take whatever is given to them. And for example, on my school board last year, most of them, in fact, I want to say all of them, did not even know that equity and equality were used to mean two different things. In the modern, in the current parlance, equity and equality are, of course, two very different things. And they were going on and on about things until I pointed this out. And then they had no clue how they wanted to define equity. So that's who you have out here. You have this first type of zombie, true believer, loves Fauci, loves all that he stands for, loves the government, just takes their word as infallible fact, not necessarily gospel, but doesn't even begin to question it. It's right because of who said it. Some tribalism at work there too, obviously. All right, we have to keep moving on here. Number two, the thrill seeker zombie. This zombie is an opportunist. This zombie doesn't really care about what is true, what is factual, what is actually right or not. This zombie just wants to enjoy the privileges that come with being a zombie, right? They want to enjoy eating and feasting on the brains of the bad guys, the apostates. They get a thrill out of scolding other people and telling them what to do. They get a frisson of excitement when they ban something and they get to tell somebody else that they can't do it, right? This is, again, perhaps an evolutionary force here at play. You can easily see how evolution has selected for people who like to control their environments. This could easily be an evolutionary advantage. Being able to control your environment definitely is an evolutionary advantage. So the people who like to do that, they've been selected for. Unfortunately, and so you have all these control freaks out there running around trying to control other people, and their circuitry is mistaking other people for the environment. And they are working on this tribal, you know, out in the veldt type of reasoning, when instead a little bit of higher order, slower thinking, as Daniel Kahneman might say, slower thinking might help them here. But yeah, that's the thrill seeker zombie. They get a cozy zizzle out of belonging and running to the next, with the zombie horde, to the next pile of brains and next bad guys to beat up, and the next bad guys in their view to try to convince or to just be destroyed if they can't bully them into convincing, right? It's like Cushiel's dart, but for nerve stapling. Being nerve stapled actually feels good to this group. They want to be in the horde. Who's in this group, you know, could be from a lot of walks of life, could have some teachers here too. You have a lot of government and public sector employees in here, guys, people who've gone into their jobs for the security. They're willing to trade anything for the security of tenure. They want that feeling of comfort. They want that feeling of belonging. They like that. They want to feel part of something eternal. They avoid risk. They avoid feeling threatened at all costs. And it feels good to win, right? So they want to run around with the winners. And that gives them not just a thrill, but also a pride of place. And of course, notice that this means they want to extend the pandemic, right? They want to keep it going so they can keep their position going. Next, we have the defeated zombie. And this is the most common type of zombie, right? This comes from all walks of life. And this is also the closest to the tetrodotoxin and the datura zombies that I was talking about at the start. These defeated zombies, they just don't have the fight in them anymore. They've been beaten down. They've been killed. They've been resurrected. They've been convinced that they're zombies. They've been convinced that standing up to the Bokor isn't worth it, right? And so they don't fight. They're just content. They want to get on with their lives, and they don't mind if it's a zombie life, so they just continue on. Again, you think of the hierarchical nature of society, our lobster brains, evolutionary forces at play, and you wonder if some people have just been predisposed to giving up sooner than others. I was talking with a teacher in the summer of 2020 on one of our glorious beaches here in the Adirondacks. And as I put my sand in the toes, I was musing on what we were going to do in the fall. And she looked at me and she said, "Well, what do you mean? What are we going to do? We're just going to do whatever they tell us to do." And she just said that as if there were no other option in the world, no other choice possible. She didn't even conceive of fighting back or making a decision for herself. So that's the third type of zombie. This goes back to that Bastiat problem and seeing what is unseen, right? They cannot see a life better than being a zombie. They don't even know that it's out there. And so they give up because they can't even consider fighting. Number four type of zombie is the hunter-killer zombie. Hunter-killer zombie, not quite as cool as those drones from Dune that can push through the Holtzman field generator shields, but still, the hunter-killer zombie can be dangerous, right? These are the zombies. These are really educated zombies. These are intelligent. A lot of doctors in this group. A lot of healthcare professionals in this group. They pick a particular issue, and then they use this issue to attack others, and they keep pressing it, and they push it, and they go deep on this one issue. So whether maybe it's airborne transmission, right? And then they use that idea of airborne transmission to justify whatever could be the case. Remember, at the very beginning in the spring of 2020, people were saying, oh, it's droplet transmission. That's why masks are so needed, because masks can stop droplets. And sure, you know, aerosols can get past a mask, but droplets can't, at least not fully. So we have to use the masks. And then, of course, the aerosol people came out and they said, oh, well, it's absolutely aerosolized, absolutely. But you know what? You still have to wear the mask because the masks help. They help cut down on the droplets. They help cut down the aerosols a little bit. And sure, you were thinking that if it was aerosolized, the mask wouldn't help, but actually, you still have to wear the mask, even though it is aerosolized. So this is the group that goes deep on one issue, the hunter-killer zombies. They take one issue and they press and they press, and they are the people who are okay. These are solid utilitarians, maybe because, like I said, a lot of them are healthcare professionals, a lot of them doctors. They've seen so much death. These are the utilitarians who are okay with 10 people dying as long as that saves 1,000. And they don't care about deontological concepts like natural rights. They don't care that to you, the lives of your two kids are worth 2 million lives of people that you don't know. It is a strictly utilitarian calculation for them, and they are willing to, take 10 people and sacrifice them as long as their models say that that sacrifice will save 1,000 people. And they will go deep into their data to prove to you that their model is correct. And they skip right over the fact that maybe utilitarian ethics and utilitarian morals aren't even a good way to proceed. They never consider the Omelas question right. Ursula K. Le Guin's The Ones Who Walk Away from Omelas is very relevant here. Go read that story. And James, William James, the utilitarian philosopher, I think she even dedicated that short story too. Last type of zombie is the breeder zombie. The breeder zombie, this is the one that you see with 20,000 Twitter followers, right? Or the zombie that you see on the news spouting off the party line, the zombie you see writing in the New York Times that masks are useful because, hey, look at these numbers from North Carolina. All these schools use masks, and look at this transmission rate, and I think it looks pretty low. Of course, that ABC study that I'm referring to in North Carolina had no control, literally no control in their study to compare their mask numbers to, and yet they get ink, they get column inches in the New York Times for their completely logically flawed, irrational, unscientific study. But they're out there breeding. These are the breeder zombies, right? They put their ideas out there and they spread them to other folks. These are the ones that the true believers follow, and they are sort of infected by the breeder zombies, if you want to put it that way. And these are the ones who they're in the CDC, and they post things like the Chew paper from the summer of 2020 with its 172 studies, when really only a handful of those studies were any touched on anything like community mask cloth use. And it said in that study itself that their certainty was low. It said in the Chew study itself that the CDC and the WHO used to mostly the WHO used it to change their recommendations on mask guidance, but the CDC did cite it to support their recommendations, their technical guidance document on masks. And it said in the study itself, it said that they had low certainty about the effects of masks, but yet that was the best they could do. And so these are the breeder zombies. They look at this paper, they either ignore the fact or they disregard the fact that it says there's low certainty, and they go ahead and they slap it up on the internet anyway. And they say this is our justification for masks, mask mandates, and then everybody else soaks up that bad idea and follows right along. All right, so those are your five types right there. You've got the true believer, you've got the thrill seeker, you've got the defeated zombie. That's the most of the population. They just go along with it. They've been beaten down. Then you've got the hunter-killer zombie, you've got the breeder zombie. So how do you survive this zombie apocalypse? I will tell you, you need to survive it with love and with understanding. Now that sounds like a hippie, guaranteed to lose approach, but look, this is, violence is not going to get it done. The bullets, double tapping, this is ridiculous. You can't even go there. Candace Owens has given us a nice example of how silly it sounds to invade Australia. That's a horrible idea. Love and understanding. Start with the breeders. I'll give you two methods here. Number one, start with the breeders. Just show why they're wrong. You can show that their data is bad, and you should show that their data is bad, but honestly, this is true. Data only convinces a few people. If data were going to do the job, then the job would be done already. Now, You have to show that you care more about people's lives than the breeders do. You have to show that you are a good person. And this is why beagle abuse stories have hit Fauci so hard, right? They make it seem like his character is in question. They make it seem like he is a bad guy. And to a lot of people, that's the only thing that will get them to start thinking. Data will not engage them. They believe because they're smart and they've looked and they've seen that science and statistics are used to justify all kinds of horrendous positions. So they're very skeptical about data right now. Data won't break that ice wall. So you do it with emotion, do it with love. Show that you care about puppies while this other guy doesn't care about puppies. Even if you do understand that animal testing is sometimes necessary, you can point out that, you know, the bad guys aren't infallible. They aren't impervious. It's like that Rocky IV moment, right, where they see that Drago can bleed. You got to get people thinking that maybe their leaders aren't perfect. They aren't saints after all. So that's the first method. Love and understanding. Show that you're a good person and show that maybe the love is not there on the other side. And the second method is outside of the breeder's arena, outside of the internet, that is, in everyday life, you have to stick up for yourself. You have to speak up. You should know your facts so that you sound like someone who is intelligent, because that still does carry some weight. But again, in everyday life, you have to speak up. You have to show that you care. Show that you care more about kids than the other side. And this should be easy because, trust me, you do. You do. Okay? There are a lot of teachers out there, a lot of teachers who do care about kids, but I've been in schools 25 years. There are a lot of teachers who do not care about kids. Okay? So it's easy to show that you care more about kids. Talk about the suicide attempts being up 50% across the nation in adolescents. My school, 240% increase in hospitalizations in suicide attempts. It's easy to show you care more about kids because you do. My school is really not doing anything about this. They say they're hiring a social worker with their funds. Well, social worker isn't here yet. They haven't changed anything yet. Talk about how tragic it is what we're doing to kids. Talk about that dad who's suing 13 Reasons Why. Talk about zits, right? I mean, you think zits aren't a big deal to a teenager, and yet masks increase them, right? That masks increase facial acne. This is well documented. And that might sound like a little thing, but, you know, don't you remember how big a deal that is to a teenager? People will remember. They will see that you mean good. And you have to show them that, because when they're in zombie right now, all they see you as is a big pile of evil bad guy brains that they can attack and feast on to show the horde that they're part of the horde, or for any of the other reasons that people remain zombies. Got to give them an excuse to break out of the horde. Love is the best way. I know it sounds pretty hippie. I know it sounds pretty hippie, but it is true. It is true. Give them something else to belong to. Give them somewhere else to be loved, right? I love you guys. I love you guys, my listeners. This is absolutely fantastic. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to find me at ADK Homeroom. Don't forget to give me that precious, precious feedback. Let me know how I'm doing as this podcast develops. It's been a lot of fun over the last month and 3 weeks. Can't wait to see where it goes. Take care, folks.